Yes.
You've had your 15 minutes. All you want another chance. Bell instead of dance and creep on the couch for another 5 hours. It's a real world marathon. TV out of mind.
Don't you have a story about a dog like fighting a raccoon in your apartment or something?
Yes, and all the dog accomplishes is scaring the literal shit out of the raccoon. So that now there's like dog and raccoon like running through raccoon shit all over the house.
Oh God, that is horrible.
My friend had an exclusive like $400 board game. The dog got it. And it tore it apart.
That really sucks.
That really does suck.
Yeah, it really sucks.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got cats. I'm really happy that I have cats now.
Yeah. Dogs are great, but they do. They'll chew up shit. All right, this isn't interesting. Let's talk about it. You're all boring me right now. No, I'm kidding.
Can we go back to how there was a $400 board game?
Yeah, that...
So, what?
That is something.
So you guys know Kickstarter, right?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
They do Kickstarter exclusives, and there's this game called Blood Rage, which...
Of course.
It's absolutely... It's Vikings meets Risk.
I've heard of Blood Rage.
It's a lot of fun.
You've heard of it?
Yeah, I play. I'm a big nerd, actually. Oh, so okay.
Sounds like the dog was like doing it right, just in a total blood rage, yeah. Ripping apart the board game.
And the thing is, the most important part of the game, and by most important, I mean like most expensive, were these four monsters that by themselves could go for $250.
Wow.
Yeah,
and they ate them.
Knowing what I know about board game culture, that doesn't surprise me at all. But yeah, that's very unfortunate for your friend.
Yeah,
that sucks. Big loss there. Big loss.
I laughed about it.
I mean, I'm sure you did.
Because I got to sell him my four pieces that for like $200.
Mwahaha.
I feel bad. Like I should have like taken some pity, but I was like, no, I'm gonna give it $200.
Yeah. So earlier we were talking about being married to a woman and being on the Club 20 team. And I identify with that, not like in the same sense, but you know, like lesbians are just like mean to bi girls a lot. So first of all, before we do that, that was a little teaser. Before we do that, everyone introduce themselves. Josh, do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay. Say your name and like how you identify and like what you love about yourself. Like one thing.
My name's Josh.
Yeah.
I'm bisexual.
Yeah.
On the verge of like pansexual to a certain degree because of like gender fluidity.
Yeah.
And one thing I really like about myself.
Mm-hmm. Love.
Love about myself. My brain. Like I can do really cool things with my brain sometimes.
Hell yeah.
Like with like tactics and board game stuff, but that's just geeks, but I love it.
Okay. That's awesome.
My name's Andrew. I'm a trans man, and I identify as either, depending on what crowd I'm in, either bisexual, pansexual, or queer. Just depending on who knows what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah, which words are familiar.
Yeah. I think the thing I love most about myself is I consider myself pragmatically compassionate. Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
I work as a social worker. My work is very important to me. And I think I managed to kind of, especially at work, and I think also in my personal life, like I managed to like kind of walk a line between like, you know, caring about other people and wanting the best for them and wanting to do, you know, wanting to put out good in the world and also like being like, okay, can I actually accomplish this?
Yeah.
And trying to figure out how to make it happen.
Okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Before we get to Pat, can we put our phones on a different table or put them on airplane mode because it's...
Are they interfering?
They're interfering a little bit.
Yeah.
So...
Got it.
Speaking of which.
Yeah. Incoming.
How am I going to Facebook?
Sorry. No, Facebook and podcast. You can't Facebook and podcast.
They're not compatible.
You can't text and podcast, unfortunately.
I can't live tweet.
You can't live tweet, unfortunately. Well, if we were like further away from this, we could be, but there's nowhere for it to go. So. All right.
Thank you, guys. Go ahead, Pat.
All right. I'm Pat Deering. I identify as mostly whatever's convenient for me at the time.
Get it.
Yeah. And I would say that something I like about myself is that I am, for as much as I gripe about things, I'm incredibly difficult to stress out. It's really tough to get under Pat Deering's skin, and it's also really tough to ever, like, actually overload me.
Yeah.
So
I think it's because the minute you feel stressed out, you have a drink. like I have recently, recently gotten to really know Pat Deering. And, like, you drink more than I thought. Not in, like, a way that's, like, problematic. Just in a way that's, like, oh... Pat Deering has his shit together, and he can fucking handle his liquor. That's what I mean. It's great.
I think you just phrased what I was trying to say much better than I did. Oh, you mean Pat Deering was out till 2:30 and stinking of whiskey last night, but he still made it to that meeting at 7?
Yeah,
like, yeah,
exactly.
That's me.
Oh, my God. I don't know how you do it. Oh, I need, like, a solid 8 hours at least, if not 10. My God. Of sleep. Anyway, I'm Christine. I'm also bisexual. And something I love about myself is that I'm very empathetic. So welcome to the show. Thanks for being here. Bye, babes.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I've wanted to do this episode because I'm very fascinated by the experience of bi men. Mostly because, like, for me, as a woman coming out as bi, like, I have some... Like, it's not as stigmatized. It is stigmatized, but in a different way. Like, in a way that's like, oh, like, you're a lady and you're bi. That's, like, cool. That's, like, hot. It's, like, bleh. But, like, if you come out as a man and you're bi, like, sometimes there's, like, weird things with, like, masculinity and, you know, just, like, stigmas and stereotypes and things. So I'm really happy that you're here to have this conversation because I am fucking ready for it. So... I guess we can start with that idea of, like, what kinds of, like, pushback do you get from the community, like, when you come out as bi?
Like, what, which community?
From the gay male community, or any community, really. I'm interested in, like, the obstacles that you are facing, like, on a daily basis.
Well, it's really funny, like, I carry a rainbow umbrella because... Who doesn't like rainbows?
Yeah.
And also because I really love being a stereotype.
Yeah.
And also being dry.
Yeah.
And also being dry. Like, those, yeah. All those things. I like being a stereotypical bisexual dry man.
Perfect.
But what's really funny is sometimes I have these interactions to where some people will be like, well, you better watch out in the short north. People might get the wrong impression. And... like, oh, or the right impression?
Right. Did you just come out to me as a homophobe?
Well, and, like, it's... People are really, really good at, like, showing their colors when they assume a lot.
Yeah. So not great.
Not always.
What's something positive? Like, do you have, like, one positive memory in your brain of, like, someone that was like, oh, fuck yeah, that's awesome?
It's going to sound depressing, but not really. Like, a few people here and there, like...
Yeah.
Like, when you meet one of your own, you're like, oh.
Yeah, what does that feel like?
I don't know. It's, like, camaraderie, but, like, also, like, there's a secret, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
You're like... You know how it feels.
Yeah.
To think about, like, multiple parts.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not to, like, sum it down to all just parts, but
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Experiences.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you two?
So it can be weird when you openly identify as bi, because then you get stuck walking this kind of a goofy sort of a middle ground between the straight male community and the gay male community.
Mm-hmm.
And like neither of them are like super cool with what's going on.
Yeah.
You know how people just get nervous with things they don't understand.
Yeah.
And it's a little disheartening because it's about equal. Like straight men are just as problematic as like gay men are, especially mm-hmm. older gay men.
Yeah.
When you come out as a bi or they piece it together.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, like, you know, as I said at the beginning of the episode, like, I use labels in a totally self-serving manner.
Right. As you should. I mean, yeah.
So, like when I'm at work and I'm networking with all the power gays in the big bad insurance industry, like, I'm gay.
Gay.
Because, yeah. It's so much easier to climb the corporate ladder when you're gay.
Yeah.
When you're bi, people are just like, why don't you have a side buzz and why aren't you working in an art gallery?
Right. Okay, so not great. Also,
yeah, it can be a little
not
yeah.
great. Andrew,
I think it's kind of weird for me because like being trans kind of supersedes my bi-ness in a lot of ways. Like it's pretty rare that like I come out to someone as bi when they don't know that I'm trans.
Yeah.
Like that's actually very rare. Like, I think probably like the biggest instance I've had like that, like where someone knows, like where I come out as bi, other, like before I come out that I'm trans, is like when, like back when I was still dating, and like sometimes like guys would like hit on me, and like I would usually like go on a date with them before I would tell them I was trans.
Yeah.
And I like even with other guys that identified as bi, like a lot of them, like you could tell it was kind of a little bit of a head fuck. Like they would be like, oh, like so you're actually a, you wear dresses. And I was like, no.
No.
That's not what that means.
Oh my God.
Dang narrow.
I mean, I would say that in general, like I think a lot of people like being trans, like they just kind of like assume like, oh yeah, of course he's into all kinds of weird things. So like, they don't even question like when I'm like, oh, like I used to date a guy or like, you know, now I date a woman. Like they don't really question me like that much.
Okay.
But I mean, I will say that like among like a lot of the trans community, I mean, like, there's definitely a subset of like trans people that like identify as bi or queer, but like, I mean, there's also a lot of trans men, like especially like straight passing trans men like me that mainly identify as straight.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's usually a little strange for them that maybe I don't identify one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah, what is the deal when, like, do you feel, like, what are the judgments, the dog cast is stopping. Oh, my God. Lula. All right, we're good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so there are only like a handful of like celebrities. Well, I think there's only one celebrity male that I know who is like actively bisexual, and that is Channing Tatum.
I was going to say Adam Levine.
Adam Levine is bisexual? Like,
oh, I don't know.
Oh.
I get all of my information from BuzzFeed lists when it comes to this sort of thing.
I mean, I would believe it.
Like, who knows who's peer checking those things?
Yeah. Oh my God. I just wonder who's like closeted, you know? And like, I wonder what sort of things like keep a bi man from coming out.
Well, I don't know. I think if you have fear of rejection from the rest of your gay male friends, that might prevent it. Like, I mean, if you've already got gay male friends,
yeah,
and you kind of lack straight friends,
yeah,
you know, because of, you know, being gay or identifying as queer in any capacity,
yeah,
the fear that you're gonna like lose that support group, mm-hmm. I think could possibly keep someone from coming out, because it happens.
Yeah.
You know, I've personally seen it happen. I've also not really had that fear of losing my gay male friends, because I also have, you know, I'm blessed to have a large group of straight male friends.
Yeah.
So, but if you've only got that one group, like, right. I can definitely see why you'd be wary to tell them if they're going to react, you know, the typical, like, 50-year-old plus gay man way.
Yeah.
Which is like, ugh, you're just greedy.
Yeah. Greedy little slut.
I imagine it's probably also pretty hard. Well, I don't have to imagine. It is really hard for, if you're with someone who may be a little jealous.
Yeah.
Like you might be with someone who, if your partner is, like, same gender or, like, similar spectrum of masculinity, then they might, like, feel a little bit more less secure about you going out with your, like, more feminine friends, and same vice versa.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, when I came out with my wife,
yeah,
that was a weird transition, because where she was semi-insecure about me being around some of her, like, friends who were women, now she was like, well, now I have to worry about everyone to a certain degree, and I have to deal with that. I'm like, well, yeah, because I am a little bit of a greedy little slut. Yeah. So.
Exactly. How do you navigate that, like, in real time? Like, how do you, have you had, like, lots of conversations about that, or is it something that's, like, not really talked about, or?
No, we talk about it. Not only have we had counseling, too.
Yeah,
like, we've had conversations and counseling.
Yeah.
So helpful.
Yeah. So you came out after you were married?
After I was dating her.
Okay. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
And I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
Interesting. So is it just something that you're kind of quiet about? Well, obviously you're, like, doing this podcast, but.
I mean, it's just kind of one of those things, like, you don't have to tell everyone that you, I don't know, every aspect of you all the time,
yeah,
kind of thing. And it's just, it's just an aspect of who I am, and I don't need to necessarily, like, voice it all the time.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
No, because I'm a comedian, I do.
Yeah.
That's why I do.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And I think, like, if I was a comedian, I would totally do that, too.
Yeah.
But I think it also has to do with my acknowledgement of, like, being a white male and acknowledging that privilege and trying not to, like, steal the spotlight in situations where that would come up.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, like, a really, really complicated topic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's, at being a white male, like, you have a lot of voice all the time. And those opportunities when you could, like, bring out an aspect of you that is not so, like, privileged, sometimes it's nice, because someone else is, like, highlighting their own lack of privilege, and it's good to be supportive of them.
Yeah.
In a way that, I don't know, lets them speak.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool. Andrew, did you say that you're dating a woman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've dated kind of all across the gender spectrum.
Okay.
Past, so.
Okay. So, when you, do you feel, okay, I don't know how to word this. I am bisexual. I'm married to a genderqueer person. And I do, like, I'm still, like, attracted to, like, other, you know, like, everyone, essentially. So how do you, Jen knows, it's fine. How do you navigate your, like, multiple attractions, like, within, because Pat, you're in a relationship with a man.
Yes.
And so, like, how do all of you navigate your different attractions, and, like, how do your partners sort of interact in that way? Like, what kinds of conversations are you having together about it?
So I kind of struck the jackpot with my situation, because I'm dating a med student who specializes in pediatrics for adolescent LGBT kids, including, like, a fellowship that he did specific to, like, trans youth health, in between his first and second year. Like, I really struck the jackpot with people who you can say, like, whatever the fuck you want to about weird sex things. So I can really trust him to be relatively empirical about everything that I say.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's just kind of out there. You know, he's 100%, you know, just gay. He doesn't, he just identifies that way. acts that way. What's the? I thought there was like a more clinical term for acts. Presents that way. There you go.
He acts super gay.
Yeah. He had a top knot for a bit.
It was really cute.
It was cute. it's you know we talk about. That sort of thing. I was a little nervous at first to tell him that I was bi.
Yeah.
And then when I told him, he was like, I'm really glad you told me, but also a little offended that you were nervous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't really have anything earth shattering to share there. And that I can just tell him, like,
right.
Oh, you know, like this girl that I talked to on the bus today.
Yeah.
Like, boy, howdy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah.
My.
Yes. Dear, oh dear. And it's just, I don't know. Just
so easy. is there a comfort level, like, with any of your relationships of, like, hey, I have multiple attractions. Like, where do I put these feelings and what are you comfortable with? Like, how do you navigate that, like, within the context of, like, your relationship boundaries?
I mean, I think I talk about it pretty openly. My girlfriend identifies as a straight cis woman and like doesn't identify as queer at all. So okay. It's kind of like, it's a little interesting because like she doesn't identify as queer, but she's dating me. So
yeah. How do you feel about that?
I mean, we've talked about it. Like, you know, basically what she said is that like, she's happy to come into queer spaces, but is always going to identify as straight because she's not in any way attracted to women. So, which I mean, you know, makes sense. I'm a man, so
yeah.
She said like in the past is that she doesn't always feel comfortable in queer spaces because she doesn't want to come in, like, she considers it like a safe space for people that don't share her identity.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It's definitely been like interesting ground to tread. She and I were friends for like 10 years before we got together, so we knew each other pretty well. But it's new, like new conversation. But yeah, I mean, we're like, you know, I'm pretty open about like my attraction, like, you know, if I'm attracted to whatever kind of person, I'll like mention it. And you know, she's I think pretty artistic, and I think she can aesthetically like appreciate people even when she's not like sexually attracted to them. So she's like, oh yeah, I can see it. And
yeah.
So I mean, I definitely don't hold back.
Yeah, that's good. What about you, Josh?
I'm in the perfect relationship ever. Like, we'll be watching some sort of, it happens a lot with Westworld. We'll be watching Westworld and she'd be like, penis. And then just, because I'll be looking at my phone and then I'll look up. And then she'd be like, boobs. And then I'll look up. And then it's like, we can both appreciate it.
Yeah.
And we're pretty open. And it's like the attraction is there, but it's not like, I don't know. It's not like she has to worry too much about anything specific because I just put that energy towards either her or hobbies.
Hobbies?
Yeah. I mean,
just pour all of your sexual frustration into D&D.
That's right. Because he's like wildly masturbating a hobby now. Listen.
I didn't donate to Pornhub because I liked it. It's because I wanted to give back.
It's a philanthropic donation.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, no, I mean, that's a real thing. Like, I enjoy doing lots and lots of things, and sometimes, like, it's not that I'm, like, trying to ignore certain aspects of things, but I think, like, you can take out, energy is energy, and it doesn't have to necessarily be sexual or not sexual for you to take and, like, have enjoyment in it.
Yeah.
And it's just keeping, like, an overall, like, well person or whole person that really helps. Like, I imagine if someone was not that interested in life and having a shit tons of sex, they'd still be a bit unhappy.
Yeah.
Not as unhappy as someone, you know, paying for Pornhub.
Right. That got dark.
I don't actually pay for Pornhub.
That got dark. How does it, so you came out after you started dating your wife. So how does it, like, so you don't think you'll ever, like explore it physically?
Oh, I have in the past.
Oh, you have. Okay.
It's just like, I mean, I grew up in a fairly, like, it was weird. Like, half of my life with my mom and my stepdad was a very, very, like, she's agnostic and he's atheist. And my other half, my dad and my stepmom, were very, like, evangelical.
Oh.
And so it was like, I mean, I would totally like do stuff and experience myself physically,
yeah,
or like experience other people,
yeah,
or like experiment, I guess,
yeah,
to the point of like being like, I dig this,
yeah,
But it wasn't like an actual coming out to the point where I was like, hey, Dad, I like dick.
Yeah. I'm super bi, Dad. I'm
super bi.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, even though I'm on this podcast, just being like, I'm bi. Like, yeah. I came out to my parents as gay.
Yeah.
Because I felt that was easier for their Irish little Irish heads to put together.
Yeah. That makes sense. How does it feel, Andrew? How does it feel coming out like twice?
I actually came out three times, really. I came out as bi like when I was a teenager, mm-hmm. and because that was, I mean, pretty much the easiest way for me to wrap my head around what I was at the time, because I was kind of like, oh, like sometimes I like wearing like men's clothes. And mm-hmm. that's not okay, but I like it anyway. And then I came out as trans, and then when I came out as trans, like I think some other people in my life that weren't, you know, as educated about gender and sexuality at the time were like, oh, okay, so you're just going to date women now, right? And I was like, well, no, actually, like, it's, you know, I still am attracted to both types of people,
yeah,
all kinds of people. Yeah. So, you know, I think there was a lot of like correcting people, like when they just assumed like I was just all of a sudden going to be straight. So.
Yeah. Interesting. How did it, how do other men in your like close circles react to you, or how did they? Was there like an adjustment period, or were they mostly like pretty accepting? Or
I feel like men are really, really good at just ignoring that anything ever happened or anything that ever came up, so I've never had to deal with it.
Okay. Yeah. Like coming out in high school was weird because it was high school.
Yeah.
So you know, you're effectively trying to tell a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
A really complicated thing about yourself, but you're also 16.
Right.
So like it's like not no good one's at communicating. No one's processing. Not good at listening. Yeah. Anything.
Right.
I think college was probably the most formative series of coming out events for me, and I actually had it relatively easy, surprisingly easy for having gone to a tiny religious liberal arts school in Central Ohio.
Yeah.
I mean, coming out to the swim team was, you know, very straightforward, and they were totally fine with it. But I think that's just part of team culture, typically. Coming out to the fraternity was a little...
Wait, where'd different. You go to school?
Wittenberg University.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Out in Springfield, Ohio.
Yeah.
Another wonderful place to have some kind of weird identity. Springfield, Ohio. Yeah. Just a wonderful, welcoming community.
Yeah.
The doors are wide open.
Yeah.
Because everything's abandoned.
Right.
the doors all rotted away years ago.
The people who are there still have Trump banners up.
Oh, yes. Yes. Awful. Yes, they do. The fraternity was a little different. I didn't have any instances of, you know, being rejected for coming out as bi to my fraternity brothers, but they kind of accepted it in a really problematic, typical frat bro way, which was just like, oh, okay, like, Pat Deering's just, like, having sex with twice as many people as everyone else. Like,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like, it was a really... I don't know, and it took me a while to kind of come to grips with that.
Yeah.
Because in college, I was just like, high fives,
yeah.
Like, perfect. And then, you know, I eventually became a real adult,
yeah.
Which for white men happens around, like, 28 in the United States.
Interesting.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
And had to, you know, process the fact, like, whoa, like, yeah, they were supportive, but, like, for real shit reasons.
Yeah, right.
It's like Andy Bernard from The Office on a trip with Oscar.
Yes, yeah.
He's trying to, like, I said, I'm going to be your wingman. I'm going to get you the greatest dick. Appreciate the love, but wrong place.
Yes, absolutely.
What about you? Anything?
A lot of the guys that I went to college with, like I'm still really close with. Like I have a really good friend group still, and like a lot of them, like, you know, I was kind of like incidentally bisexual, like in college, because like I was dating a guy like pretty much all through college, but I like I still identified as bi at the time, and then I came out as trans, and like all my friends from undergrad were very supportive, and like I think took a minute to wrap their heads around because I was really the first trans person they'd ever met.
But, yeah,
were really cool. I think now like when I come out to people like. I'm usually very cautious. Like I usually, especially like with men, I like to know the person ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I mean, I actually find like the most straight men I tend to interact with on a day-to-day basis are clients actually, and I'm not coming out to them. So, I kind of a lot of times let people draw their own conclusions.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Dogs are fighting right underneath the table.
Can we not?
Are they just sneezing on each other?
Yeah, they're just, get out of here. Bad dogs. I know.
That is one weird thing, like I was just thinking about, like, the idea of, like, a lot of genitalia-focused, like, comments that I've received.
Yeah.
And, of course, I've been, like, just, like, putting them out on, like, the podcast and whatnot, but, like... Why do people always just think about genitalia all the time?
I know. Bodies are weird. Like, when I was, like, coming out, I don't know, a long time ago, I came out kind of twice, too. Because at first I was like, oh, I just, like, I'm attracted to, like, gals. You know, I was, like, still, like, acting very, like, straight at the time. And then, like, after I broke up with my first girlfriend, I was like, oh, like, this can be, like, more fluid, you know? So then I was like, oh, I can come out as bi now. So I kind of came out twice too. I don't remember why I started telling this story. What were you just saying?
I'm talking about genitalia.
Yeah, talking about junk.
Yeah. Junk.
People focus on junk.
So yeah, so I was thinking like, but like it doesn't matter. And I talked to Brooke Cardis about this when she was on the show, where that like sex is just like mashing nerves together, you know? And like just come in different like forms, I guess. And I don't know why it's so focused that way either. And for a long time, for that reason, I was like resistant to identify as bi, because I was like, well, bi is like in and of itself like a binary, right? But then like I've accepted that you can kind of identify it or like define it like on a spectrum, like whatever way, you know, you want. So when you're talking about pan, like I just assume that that's what people mean when they say bi.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I see the whole spectrum part of it, but also at the same time, like, maybe that just personally, I can also kind of see it as, like, a fixed identity.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, like, I can be in a monogamous relationship, you know, with a man, just a one person,
yeah.
Or I guess, you know, two people, same-sex relationship. You know, I can do that without being poly or all these other things and still be bi. Like, that's still my identity.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that.
No, I just
I don't even think that was a counterpoint to what you said.
No, no, that makes sense. I mean, I just mean, like, you know, you can be attracted to whoever who identifies as whatever and still be bi. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. But it doesn't have to be on the binary.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I feel like I definitely have known bi people that did identify like as bi instead of pan, but mm-hmm. I feel like in general like most bi people are kind of more open to like sexuality and like gender as a spectrum in general. So
yeah, I think so too.
But I mean, I have known people that are specifically like you know not really wanting to date outside like
men. I'm sure it exists. Yeah.
Yeah, but I do feel like it's rarer. But I mean, I do think there's also kind of that assumption that like. That a lot of times being bi also means you're poly, because it like you know I've definitely had people like say like in the past like well don't you like you know if you're dating a woman it's like well don't you miss men or like something like that
and do you
I don't know I mean I'm definitely still attracted to men but I mean I don't like I don't know I mean I don't It's not something I usually think of. Like I feel like I tend to become like physically attracted to people like more like once there's an emotional attachment
right.
in place. So
yeah.
I mean I would say that I don't. I mean like once in a while like you know I do. I mean there's definitely the attraction still.
Yeah.
I mean I also like you know
not fairly, a need to act on it. Really.
Fairly monogamous in my attractions.
So. Yeah.
I think it's kind of like if you, like for heterosexual people, I'm pretty sure that they find other people attractive. And there are some people who are monogamous and heterosexual that can totally exist as, you know, just Jill and whatever the other guy, Jill and Bill.
Jill and Bill.
Jill and Bill.
Classic American couple.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I think that's one of the stereotypes that bi people face, too. But I also think that it's, like, okay to, like, want to do that. But I don't think that it's common. It's as common as people think. Do you guys think that?
No, I don't think it's as common as people think.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
You know, I think most people, or maybe not most people, I don't know. I don't like to get into the stats realm when I have, like, no stats to back up what I'm saying.
That makes you intelligent. Yeah.
Here's an arbitrary number that I got from
just made up.
The web.
BuzzFeed.
No, I think a lot of people do just assume that bi people are always existing in some kind of, like, polyamorous, like, sort of situation.
Yeah.
Which, like... isn't true.
Right.
Or, I mean, it's probably true for some bi people, maybe even a lot. But, like, you know, me personally, I'm not poly, so when I'm in a relationship, it is monogamous.
Right.
And, like, when relationships come and go, you know, there's the possibility the gender might switch up in the next one.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've heard a lot. I mean, I think that's, like, an inside joke of, like, bi people. Like, oh, yeah, I'm greedy. And, like, oh, yeah, like, I can't control myself. And, like, shit like that. Like, I feel like that is, like, one of the big stereotypes that, like, we all encounter every day.
Right. Which, like, I wish I could live up to that stereotype, but I can't. Yeah. Like, I have a 9-to-5, and also I'm trying to do this comedy thing. I'm trying to go to law school. Like, I don't have time to have sex with anybody besides Nate.
We barely have time to do it together.
Yeah, he's in Mansfield for the week doing his doctor shit.
Yeah, he's in med school.
That does bring it to, like, kind of a darker place, though, that, like, I do feel this immense, like, when someone finds out, like, not only do all my friends, like, not my friends, but people I meet that are dependent, like, it doesn't matter what gender they are now, now they're going to think that I want to fuck them and objectify them all the time, which is, like, not a great feeling, because you're, like, especially being a dude walking around in the world, you're like, okay, well, I don't want to smile too much at someone.
Right.
I don't want to be too happy around those people.
Right.
Just because they might think that I'm trying to seduce them.
Yeah. No, I get that. I used to hide behind, like, before I came out as bi, I remember actively, like, hiding behind, like, the term gay. You know, I never really identified as lesbian, but people just, like, call me that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's okay. So, like, I'd just be like, oh, I don't want, like, anyone to think that I'm attracted to them, and I'm not. Oh, but they think I'm a lesbian anyway, so it's no big deal.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But the word lesbian is gross to me. I'm just, like, not into it. So I just don't identify with it. I'm not hating on lesbians. I'm
just their title. Like, pick a one syllable one like everybody else did. Jesus.
Oh, I'm really sorry, lesbians. I love you. My inner lesbian is dying to come out to play softball, so I'm not that grossed out by it. What else? What do you guys want to talk about? Masculinity? What do you think? What part do you think that plays in it? This is a very interesting topic to me, but I don't have any specific questions. I'm just like, how does it all fold in together?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is probably even beyond just the bi thing, just you know, being queer in general. And I think there's that typical public perception that you know, kind of your level of stereotypical traditional masculinity corresponds to, like, where you are as far as being queer.
Yeah.
And as someone who I think for the most part, like, exudes traditional masculinity.
Yeah.
And I know the people that are listening at home that have never seen me are going to disbelieve this, because they're definitely hearing my awful, like, Cleveland accent. And they're just like, who's this flighty little NPR reporter?
He looks just like LeBron James, just so you know.
Yeah, people are definitely listening at home being like, who is, like, David Sedaris' streetwise cousin here? Like, why is he so nasally? But, you know, I think for the most part, I exude traditionally masculine characteristics. Like, fuck, I'm wearing a polo shirt. It's tucked into blue jeans right now.
You wear nice belts.
That's where it comes out, is the belts.
I know, it's the belts.
The only thing I've ever bought from Amazon was a belt.
Ooh.
But, so I think, you know...
I'm going to have to dig deeper in that one later, Pat.
It's 2017. That could be a whole podcast. My resistance to online shopping could be a whole podcast in and of itself.
I watch TV shows on Amazon. And that's after I buy, like, 5 things just for fun.
Yeah. I think it kind of... It always... at least in my experience, sparks this whole, like, multiple coming out process.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I moved to a new unit at work, and, like, everyone's asking me, like, oh, like, do you have a girlfriend? Like, do you have kids? Like, all this stuff. And I'm just like, no. And God, no.
Yeah.
And also, like, where would I get them from? Like, I don't reproduce by, like, budding. Like,
yeah. It's Amazon.
Cut off a finger. Yeah, they come from Amazon. Yeah. So it does lead to this kind of like multiple coming out process. And then like also probably one of the things that marks me as traditionally masculine is that like I can't let misperceptions about me stand and I have to address them immediately.
Yeah.
So like I come out in the break room at work like all the time at like 8:32 in the morning.
Right. Is it like a subtle coming out, like my boyfriend and I, or is it more like I am very gay, so like what is it like?
So it depends. Like if people are like, oh, do you have kids? You know, I usually respond with something like, no. And if I did wind up with any, like I'd have some interesting questions for Nate.
Yeah.
And then like they kind of pause and are like, no, I guess like this is a podcast. No one saw that face. Yeah. But they blankly stare at me and then they, you know, the suburban house mom neurons connect and they figure it out.
Yeah.
Or it's just, you know, if someone doesn't know and they haven't ever asked me anything directly, I'll just find some reason to like mention my boyfriend.
Right, right.
Usually, it's definitely always in the realm of like him being in med school.
Yeah.
Because like that's also because
you
got to
brag about it.
Exactly. Right?
Sometimes I'm like, Jen's an NP school. One of my friends is like, oh, so you married up? I was like, what? That's rude.
Yeah. See, I mean, I kind of thought that I was going to possibly marry up until Nate was like, I'm really into pediatrics. And I was like, oh, so you're going to wind up working for Nationwide Children's. And they're like, fancy-ass NICU.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, it's a prestigious place to work. It's a wonderful place to be. You're really, you know, like saving the world if you work in Nationwide Children's NICU.
Yeah.
But you know who doesn't have any money? Sick babies.
Yeah, no, they sure don't. They sure don't, and they're all sick.
Yeah, so it's really not a marrying up situation when people go into pediatrics.
Well, yeah, they're paid less.
They are, but I work in the like health insurance. I see those claims. That money is going somewhere because those are like we call those $1 million babies when they're first born and go to the NICU.
Yeah.
That money's going somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, they're all being treated and it's all being paid for.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
It's, yeah. I mean, a lot of it is that it, people who do have coverage, they charge so much because there's a disproportionate number of people who have children in the NICU that don't have any coverage. So they make up for it by charging these astronomical amounts. I also work in health insurance. So the NICU is very, very, very expensive, but it's because a lot of the times the people that utilize it aren't covered because it's you know it's a history of never having access to healthcare that winds up to the situation where you're having a preemie child or a child that needs intensive care because you never had care when you were in the run up to your pregnancy because you couldn't afford it
or because everyone's pushing off having babies until they're 35 or continuing to have babies until they're 35 and so on.
Also that millennials and these fucking quiverful people, Jesus.
Just adopt.
My God. So what about masculinity for both of you? How does it fold in?
So I feel like in general like I feel like I kind of arrived at my comfort level with my masculinity a little bit differently, maybe because I had to come out and as trans and all of that. And, I feel like my gender identity is very solidly masculine. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it's kind of weird because like I was thinking when some people were talking, I was thinking like I feel like it's actually weirder for me to date cis men in particular because it's harder for me to feel masculine when I'm dating cis men. I think because of like a lot of cis men like kind of maybe come into it with maybe like with this unspoken like idea that like I'm going to be like the more feminine or like more submissive partner or like, you know, just kind of like that classic idea.
And like like a privilege essentially.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so like, and I you know, I tend to be like very sensitive about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Understandably.
And, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Cause like, I feel like even though I identify like as pretty solidly masculine, like the way I identify my masculinity is definitely more like more like intellectual or like more like kind of like artistic or like kind of like gentle masculinity, I guess.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like I like to, I mean, I spend a lot of my time like baking. So like, okay. So like, I mean, yeah. I'm not like, you know, going out there and like, you know, like cheering at a sports bar. And all
yeah.
That.
Right.
So,
right. Like a healthy masculinity or help me define healthy masculinity.
Ooh, I love this.
The dogs beat the shit out of each other.
It's not that. That's not healthy masculinity. Your dogs are being toxic masculine all over the place.
Stop it. Enough.
That's a very, very, like, heavy...
I'm going to let him out.
Okay. Come on. I know
you're empty. You got me up.
There's going to be so many animal noises on this podcast. I love it.
God. Well, I mean... Makes dumb sense talking about masculinity, right? Mm.
Yeah. Right. Talking about masculinity in the back, there's just like, rawr, 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 like claws on the hardwood.
Okay, help me define healthy masculinity.
I honestly think that it's very, very hard to define without in practice. Like, it can't just be description.
Okay.
It has to be constantly... Well, like, it starts with toxic masculinity, I think.
Right.
Like, you have these people, like, this idea that boys will be boys.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's hitting you because he likes you. That's not... And then you can't hide your feelings, you can't discuss your feelings, you can't cry.
Yeah.
All those things.
Yeah.
That, like, just make people not deal with their lives in a really proper, reasonable, healthy fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That's toxic masculinity, and it's... Whatever is not that,
yeah.
Be like a form of healthy masculinity.
Yeah.
And in reality, it's like, it's understanding that, well, like, you're like, masculine individual can really be into, like, sports or not be into sports. And
right.
It doesn't matter what you're into. It matters how you act as an individual, and that's what you find masculine.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're not, like, hurting anyone.
No. Don't hurt anyone.
Yeah, right.
Don't lord over anyone. Don't be a super possessive, like, really, like, crazy cis men. Like, because if you're a cis man like that, you're not going to be really reasonable.
Yeah.
Like, if that, like I was just thinking about, like, picturing, like, someone really lording over the relationship, and I'm like, that sounds disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. As far as when you were talking about, like,
yeah,
your previous relationships.
Yeah, though, I mean, I feel like I should definitely say that, like, I mean, there have been... You know, a fair number of trans men that I've known that have also not necessarily had some come into spaces with healthy masculinity. Like, I feel like there's sometimes a lot of, like, you know, overcompensation or like feeling like, you know, like it, like for some people, like taking advantage of women or, like, you know, being like really aggressive and dominant, like that's the only frame for masculinity they have. So, like,
yeah.
I think for some trans men, like, that's the kind of masculinity they try to exemplify when they come into spaces. Like, I shouldn't be, but I'm always, like, a little aghast when, like, I know a trans man that'll, like, make sexist jokes or, like, you know, tell their girlfriends to, like, you know, get back in the kitchen or, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, pick your sexist poison.
Right.
And I mean, like, I'm always kind of shocked, but at the same time, it's like, oh, well, you know, this is a very pervasive, like, very, you know, in some ways very, like, very seductive, like, sort of, like, mentality.
Yeah.
Because it makes people feel strong when they're weak. And
right.
It's so very fragile.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Yeah, I mean, I've definitely known trans men like that as well, so I don't mean to be misleading.
Is there, because I've known butch lesbians like that, mm-hmm. who have this, like, very unhealthy idea of, like, masculinity, and it can be, like, incredibly disheartening, especially for someone like me who sort of, you know, has experienced the world has experienced unhealthy masculinity from like a source that you expect it from, and then also from a source that you do not expect it from, which is like really fucked up. Is that a conversation that is had within the trans male community, or is it more like there's just like a small section of the population like that, or how does it sort of work in the community?
I think it's an ongoing conversation, and I mean, I think, you know, I don't necessarily know if we can say like it's either or, like either you know people are displaying healthy masculinity or they're not. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think we all receive it's messages,
fluid.
Right?
Like, yeah.
I mean, I know like there have definitely been times when like I haven't like displayed my masculinity
right.
in many ways, but, you know, I think it's kind of an ongoing conversation, and it's very much like a part of like what makes you a man, like what makes
yeah.
you identify like your gender in a certain way in the first place.
And, yeah. Do you feel that, this is for everyone, do you feel that men do a good job of holding each other accountable?
No.
Good answer.
I'd like to hear from the fraternity brother.
Yeah. No, yeah, men are really garbage at holding each other accountable when it comes to, you know, displaying characteristics of toxic masculinity. You know, I agree with what was said earlier, that, like, healthy masculinity is masculinity that's not hurting others or hurting you
yeah.
Through its practice. And outside of that, masculinity, anything. You can call anything you want to masculine.
Right, right.
I mean, because one, gender is bullshit.
It's like a contract.
And,
yeah, it's
yeah.
a construct.
So as long as you're not hurting others and you're not hurting yourself, like, then that's healthy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, men are really garbage at holding each other accountable when you're displaying either of those things. Because, I mean, like, one... it can be really weird to express your personal feelings to another man.
Why?
Because the reaction is either like they don't know what to do,
yeah.
or it's kind of like a why are you sharing this with me? Or the third and the worst is like fucking man up. Like
yeah.
what's your deal?
Yeah.
What
is
so,
that? Is it just cultural, or is it what is it?
It's cultural. There's the expectation that, you know, men don't let emotional stuff get to them.
Yeah.
I know it's probably weird that I'm talking about this when I was the person who started off the podcast being like, shit doesn't get to me. But I like to think that that's just a characteristic of me outside of this.
Yeah.
That like, if it did, like, I'd be able to express that
yeah.
To people. But then also, you know, when people are, you know, when men are hurting others, like it's
yeah.
not addressed as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely think it is cultural because like most men I know that have like pressed forward and broken through that barrier, whether it be with like a counselor
yeah.
or like another close friend or something, like talk about how the payoff is like 1,000% worth it.
Yeah.
So it's not something that we're hardwired for.
Right. Exactly. Well, one thing that I have heard, and this just could be like a rumor and like totally like a stereotype fucked up, but I have heard that like some of my friends, for instance, have been in a relationship with a trans man who like goes on T, and suddenly this person is like different, like changes, right? Like becomes like very like aggressive, like, and like sexual. Like, is there, like, is that true?
I feel like I need to be a little careful of my words here.
Okay.
Like, there's probably, I mean, no matter what I say, there's going to be someone that doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Even asking that
question, I'm like, I probably shouldn't ask.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I will say that that wasn't my experience.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's a big psychosomatic component, in all honesty. Like I think that there's like, you know, like you start T, and then, you know, you feel like you can maybe display things that you haven't always been able to display before, and you feel safer in doing that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there are probably a lot of people that feel safer like displaying emotions. I think sometimes like they're like, I mean, transition's a very difficult process. So
yeah.
I mean, I do think that there are probably some people that like maybe aren't necessarily doing some work that they should be doing, or, you know, would probably help make things healthier for them if they would do. And so they're maybe sometimes acting out and displaying their feelings aggressively.
Right. Right.
You know, I think
it's a lot of components. Yeah. I think biological.
Right. I mean, yeah. The process of like taking testosterone definitely puts you through a second puberty. So like, I mean, your emotions are kind of all over the place, but I mean, I will say like, I am definitely like not more aggressive now than I was. One thing that did change for me though, that I do feel like, you know, they talk about like the fight or flight response. Like I do feel like my default kind of switched more from flight to fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I do feel like there are like some subtle changes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, you're not gonna like Hulk out suddenly.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's actually like a lot of studies of the genitals, and I went for like psychology in my undergrad, and then a lot of focus in like gender studies and specific on that. Where they found that they were measuring testosterone levels specifically in people who like had a significant amount, like 2 to 4 times as much testosterone in them, and there was no like real change in aggressive behavior.
Okay.
But they did find that people with lack of testosterone didn't have sex as much as people with testosterone, but there's no difference in like the amount of sexual behavior in a lot of different studies. So I think there is like a huge cultural thing.
Yeah.
And maybe the fight or flight thing, maybe that had a little bit to do with like, maybe that has a little bit, what do you think? Do you think it's like possible where it could have been like a more comfortable, like in that fight mode rather than flight?
Yeah. I mean, I think that could be, I mean, I became a lot more comfortable with myself when I started testosterone in general. So, I mean, I think that that's probably part of it.
Yeah.
I do think that there's maybe like, you know, like a like your base level of aggression is maybe like a little bit higher.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, I will say that like, you know, again, just my experience,
right.
by far not, I can't speak for every trans person.
But. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm.
And obviously like, and this kind of like makes me think about like the regular or the, what was it? The bell curve.
Yeah.
The vast majority of people in the middle
are
not going to experience like big things, but there's still a lot of people who aren't directly in that middle. You know, right.
Yeah.
So it's like to say that anyone's going to be, you can't predict people very well in all these situations because there's a lot of different components, right?
Right.
I mean, even if your outliers are like 5% of the population, like on a bell curve, like you're still going to have, you know, that's still a substantial number of people, really.
Yeah.
Billions of people.
Yeah.
Billions.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like, I was a women's studies minor in college. Obviously, like, we don't really have men's studies because, like, that's just, like, almost everything always. But there are a lot of things that, like, you know, you learn about women, like, culturally that you kind of don't learn as directly about men. So, like, a lot of these questions about, like, healthy masculinity and, like, testosterone and, you know, just, like, interactions between men in general are things that I am not at all familiar with. So just the fact that like we're sitting down having this conversation is like very interesting to me, because I feel that like interpersonal connections between men aren't often explored. Do you feel that way?
Oh yeah. I mean, they're not really explored outside of, you know, that kind of superficial, like, this is my dude.
Yeah.
Like, we've been dudes since we were 17.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's really no sort of
dialogue.
Yeah, you don't really, especially not with that person.
Yeah.
You don't really explore that.
Do you feel like there's a need there? Like, do you feel like personally, do you feel like I need to have this connection with another man? Like friendship or whatever it is.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I feel that. I mean, I was lucky in that it was kind of, you know, set up and provided for me after all the years of being a competitive swimmer, like always being on a team.
I
feel like, you know, team friendships develop kind of quicker and a little deeper than just like, you know, a classmate or something. So it was kind of that, you know, I felt a need for it and I still feel a need for it, but it was like dropped into my lap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely say like, I personally like feel a need for it. Like I really, you know, I enjoy having close male friendships. Like, I, you know, like a lot of my, actually several of my close friends that were really the only men I was friends with here, like, moved away last year. And like, I do sometimes still miss that. But I feel like in general, like, as a social worker, like, a big part of my job is counseling. And I feel like I notice how much a lot of other men seem to need it in particular. Like, I mean, a lot of the guys that I work with are, like, you know, in their 50s and 60s, and they're straight men that haven't been able to emotionally connect with anybody, really, especially not other men.
Yeah.
And, like, I have, like, guys that tell me things that they've never told anybody before.
Yeah.
And you know, and a lot of them are expecting to be shamed, and they're expecting, like, they're not expecting to be affirmed in that moment. And so you know, and I think when you're able to affirm them and able to validate them in some way, like, I think that's a big part of the therapeutic bond for men, especially because they're not used to receiving that from other men.
But
I think there's definitely a need there.
There's definitely a huge need. I don't have that at all. Like, I don't think it, I think it's also partially because I've always been kind of direct, and I've had a lot of friends who, I mean, not to say they were small minded in the sense of like I'm greater than them, but just in the sense of, like, I don't know. It's not like dirty jokes. It's oppressive jokes.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference. Like, you can be dirty.
Yeah.
I have lots of friends. I mean, I'm sitting in the room with a few comedians right now
who
make tons of dirty jokes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I've heard a few of them.
Yeah.
They are dirty, but they're not oppressive in
their
nature.
Right.
Like, and
so are those things that you would hold them accountable for and then be like, peace? Or they would peace out? Or what? Like, how did that conversation go?
They'd peace out.
No kidding.
Like, that, I'd literally be like, so you, I mean, you probably shouldn't say that. Like, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, be an asshole or anything, but, like, you know, maybe, I don't know, be a little kinder. It's not, like, actually like this. You're kind of playing into a very, very characteristic individual that isn't necessarily nice. And they'd be like, well, that's your opinion. I'm going to unfollow you now, Josh.
No kidding. I'm
like, okay.
That sucks. How do you think that more close male, like, friendships like that would affect the way that men culturally interact with other men and women?
Well, they've seen it, like, it grows communities.
Yeah.
And it's very, very healthy. Like, there's this documentary called Tough Guys. Ooh. As in G-U-I-S-E. It's like this double.
Yeah.
Super, super great. But it shows, like, this extreme end of, like, toxic masculinity, especially in marginalized individuals, like, specifically. And they focus a lot on Black and Hispanic communities in lower income areas.
Yeah.
And how this, like, toxic masculinity, this very, very, like, machismo attitude can really, really ruin communities and ruin their own lives, and how there's this kind of shift in some of those people to becoming, like, really part of this amazing community. And a lot of that is, like, just being open and discussing things and having great tools, like this fine person right here.
Yeah.
and basically having someone you can talk to, like a social worker or a group therapy session, like, where you build that community is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, if men were able to form more bonds like that, I mean, I think you probably would see a lot less toxic masculinity. You'd probably see more healthy masculinity, because I think healthy masculinity, like, part of what it hinges around is being able to form those bonds.
And, yeah.
Like, being able to.
That's
you
true.
Know, I think toxic masculinity makes you, like, more distant from, like, especially emotionally from other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about the way that emotional connections sort of, like, inform my life and, you know, make me a better person. And when I think about men who don't have any emotional connections, because it's, like, not something that they're, like, brought up to seek. Right? You're not brought up. Is that true?
Totally.
You're not brought up to seek it? Or is it, like, what is that? You're not brought up to interact with other men that way? Like, why isn't it there, I guess, is my question. Do you know?
The why?
Yeah.
It's a very complicated question. Like, Yeah.
Just because you're like modeled other things.
I mean, there's so much of it in like media that we consume, in our product consumption, in yeah. our schools, in our early sports teams, you know, probably from a lot of people's parents, that, you know, even if your parents aren't like specifically trying to bring you up that way.
Yeah.
Like it gets imparted to you that way.
Right. Right.
Like our biggest blockbuster films always star some type of like impervious, never crying tough guy.
Yeah.
Whether he's like fighting space aliens or like running from dinosaurs.
Yeah.
It's always kind of the same character archetype.
Yeah.
And you know, he's there for everybody else in the movie.
Yeah.
Is that just when they get weepy.
Sorry.
Pratt? Was that just a motion to Chris Pratt? That was Chris Pratt that you were.
Oh fuck! It was Chris Pratt, who apparently though in real life is like not that. Like Chris Pratt's pretty great at like apologizing and maybe crying and all those things. Yeah. But like no, yeah, that was totally like Guardians of the Galaxy and also Jurassic Park.
sorry.
Yeah, you're right. Fuck! I was really hoping that it was Will Smith and Doctor, whatever his name is from the original Jurassic Park, but I guess it wasn't. So, and now I've totally lost my train of thought. No, yeah, you're fine. Yeah, so even like, you know, if someone's not consciously like telling you when you're a kid, like, boys don't cry. And yeah, like,
but they do tell you that, right?
I don't know. No one ever told me that. I know that there was that movie, which I haven't seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think anyone ever told me that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the same goes for women, you know? Our society is just so fucking bullshit gendered that it's like, you can't grow up as a person. You, like, grow up as, like, a girl who likes pink or, like, a boy that likes blue, starting with fucking gender reveals. Mm. I'm, like, seething right now. I can't even come out with words because, like, it makes me feel just, like, sad for those kids who, like, already have these, like, expectations placed on them. And I think that if our culture in general stopped being so focused on like performative gender, like we would have more healthy connections and less fucking violence. You know, I mean, I think in the end, like that's the conclusion I keep coming to is like, perhaps if there was more emotional connection, there would be less violence and people would be less, you know, like attached to their fucked up beliefs.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think?
Yes, all of that. Like, I don't...
I mean, that or... I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the reason why is because they view these things as very feminine.
Yeah.
Like crying and being emotional.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And those things are very, very negative to men.
Yeah.
And like you have these stereotypical, like, gender roles where if a man is a CEO and acts in, like, a very assertive way and is, like, commanding when he walks into a room, he's a great leader. But if a woman is it, then she's an asshole.
Right.
Like, and I think that a lot of that, kind of circling back a little bit to, like, I don't know, bisexuality to a certain degree, I think that a lot of it has to do with, like, this innate view of the feminine as a negative thing.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, yep. That's unboxing a lot.
Oh,
but.
Yeah. No, people hate women. Absolutely. Like, that was, like, a big part. I mean, that was a big part of our last election. Like, whether or not people want to admit it, it's like, you hate women.
Especially and, since people are doing the same thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of internalized misogyny, too, with women. Just because that's, I don't know. It's so fucked up. I'm going to...
You could have a whole separate podcast on that.
Oh yeah, we're going to. Don't worry. We'll get there. All right. Before we close out, is there anything else anyone wants to talk about or bring up? Thanks for talking to me about masculinity for so long. That was important. That was important.
Oh, I know what I wanted to bring up. The bi pride flag is stupid. It's really bad. Like
what,
it's
so what that, even is the bi pride flag?
Pink, blue, and purple. Is that right?
It's pink and blue, and then it overlaps, and then it's like purple in the middle. And it's just
just make it purple.
It's purple.
Just make so it much purple. Easier. Yeah.
Purple is my favorite color.
I love purple.
Garbage. And like so, I almost anytime I'm in the presence of a bi flag, I'm just like, no, I'm gay actually.
Like, it's one of those times that's convenient. This, yeah.
Get this vinyl monstrosity away from me.
Wow, that was a good way to end. I mean, I'm into that. Yeah, because it ties back to the gender stuff. I mean, it's like pink and blue, and in the middle, you're purple. Like, fuck you. Like, no, we're all just whatever. It's not. We don't need to do this bullshit. All right.
And be nice.
Be nice. Yeah, be nicer than me.
Yeah, be nice to people.
Be nice. You're very nice, Josh. Mm. Yeah, very nice. All of you are nice. Everyone in this room is nice.
So nice.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
It's nice to see you all.
So nice.
Okay. Bye.
Oh.
Bye.